The University of Delaware MBA supports WHYY. Full-time, part-time, and online, the UD MBA Plus can be structured to meet your schedule, offering a personalized combination of on-campus and online learning. Upcoming drop-in information sessions will be held from 4:30 to 6:30 p.m. Wednesday, June 3rd and Wednesday, June 10th. Learn more at udmba.com. That's udmba.com. The University of Delaware MBA. It is all about you.
A hearing on the Amtrak train derailment in Philadelphia yielded more questions than answers, like how hard it is to check the time of calls from a cell phone. I'm Dave Heller, and this is Newsworks Tonight. First up this evening, WHYY's Tom McDonald reports that the hearing also included a heavy dose of partisan sniping.
Amtrak head Joseph Boardman admits that if positive train control or an automatic braking system had been in place, those systems could have prevented the fatal derailment in Philadelphia. Boardman says the railroad will meet a federal deadline to implement them on the Northeast Corridor, or NEC, by the end of the year.
And I promise you that by the end of this year, this system, which will dramatically enhance safety, will be complete and operational on the NEC.
Congressman Scott Perry from Central Pennsylvania asked why the system hasn't been put in place already.
This particular portion of the line makes anywhere from $400 to $500 million a year. Plus, we give Amtrak. The taxpayers fund Amtrak at the tune of $1.3 to whatever, $2-point-something billion a year. How come they can't spend 10% of what they lost in food service on positive train control?
Perry, a Republican, was fighting Democrats on the committee who have argued underfunding by Congress contributed to the crash. Dennis Pierce of the Brotherhood of Locomotive Engineers says there needs to be a second crew member in the cab during operation of a train.
To monitor the left side of the train for defects, stuck brakes, or observe the left side of the highway rail crossings for highway rail grade incidents.
Christopher Hart, head of the National Transportation Safety Board, says there's no evidence a second person in the cab will help.
Our experience is limited. It would be based on our accidents, and there haven't been that many two-person crews. But from that limited experience, we don't find that two-person crews are an improvement over single-person crews.
The question of why trains don't have seat belts was also explored. Acting Federal Railroad Administrator Sarah Feinberg says adding seat belts would require replacing seats on every train. That could cost billions of dollars.
The hardening of the seats that would be required in order to put seatbelts onto trains would actually cause more injuries in an accident.
Final results of the investigation into the crash might not be ready for a year. Officials say they still don't know whether the engineer was using his cell phone while at the controls. That left many members of Congress nearly speechless and calling for an answer within 2 weeks, or they will be brought back before the committee. I'm Tom McDonald, WHYY News.
Turnout in last month's Pennsylvania primary election, a dismal 19.08% of registered voters. Looking to boost balloting, Erie Democratic State Representative Ryan Bizarro is pushing for same-day voter registration. He joins me now to lay out the case. Currently, voter registration applications need to be turned in at least 30 days prior to an election. What are the specifics of your measure?
That's right. Currently, I mean, in Pennsylvania, we have to have them 30 days in prior to election. What my bill does, what House Bill 13 does, is it allows same-day voter registration here in Pennsylvania. And it's not really some new way of thinking. In fact, this has been done for years. It's been done in 12 states, including the District of Columbia. And Hawaii set up measures to do it. It's been tested. It's been proven to work. Studies and polls show that states with same-day voter registration had an average turnout of 48%. And that's roughly 12 points higher than those states like Pennsylvania without same-day registration. So I'm hoping what this does is that once passed and once enacted into law, that we're going to see an increase of civic participation. I think that it gives voters who have busy lives and chaotic lives, as it is, they don't have that opportunity to register in that 30-day window and they want to vote. They can go to the polls right then and there, vote, and send the person they'd like to elected office.
Now the measure is currently sitting in the House State Government Committee. Your fellow lawmakers are decidedly more Republican than during the Corbett administration, which worked to enact a voter photo ID law. Mm-hmm. What are the chances of this bill getting out of committee?
You know, I'm going to remain positive on this. I've put all the safety provisions in there to prevent what they would like to call is there's a chance for voter fraud in there, when really there's not. There's just no chance that it could happen. In fact, in states that there have same-day registration, there hasn't been one case of documented voter fraud due to same-day voter registration. And what my bill does, it allows for the provisional ballot to take place, which would only be counted after Pennsylvania Department of State has approved the voter registration application. So I'm giving up what they want with the photo ID. I've made all these sort of concessions to the general Republican demands. This bill is a common-sense bill. It's a good piece of legislation, and this is something that voters overwhelmingly want.
You're quoted as saying it's time to bring our voting system in line with 21st-century practices. And toward that end, what might you say to independent voters who are disenfranchised in the primary process?
There is several voter reform initiatives that we're working on here in Pennsylvania. One of them always gets bring up is allow third parties to vote in the primaries. This is just one step that gets the ball moving and keeps the conversation going till we can fully implement an effective change moving forward here in PA. We've got to get people more engaged. We've got to have people participating in their government. It's important. Every decision that we make affects people's lives. People should have a say in their lives. People should get out and be active in their government.
Thanks for joining us on Newsworth tonight.
Thank you so much for having me.
That's Erie Democratic State Representative Ryan Bazar. When you flip on a light switch in Pennsylvania, odds are you're burning coal. But as the fracking boom continues to unlock huge quantities of natural gas, the electric grid is changing. State Impact Pennsylvania's Marie Cusick reports that the shift is driven by both market forces and new regulations.
Panda Liberty plant that you see here is the first power plant born of the Marcellus Shale.
Bill Pentak is standing in the middle of a construction site. He's vice president for investor relations and public affairs at Panda Power Funds. It's a Dallas, Texas-based company that's currently building two gas power plants in Pennsylvania.
This plant was sited precisely where it is because of its access to the abundant, high-quality natural gas that's found a mile to 2 miles beneath our feet.
The Liberty plant already towers 9 stories over the Susquehanna River in Towanda, Bradford County. But it won't come online until early next year. Another facility outside Williamsport should be done a short time later. And the company's working to finance a third project near Sunbury to repurpose an old coal plant. Pentak says these projects are part of a bigger story. The electric grid is shifting away from coal toward natural gas.
What's taking place here is taking place across the United States.
It's a trend Gary Helm is watching. He studies emerging markets for the PJM Interconnection. That's the regional grid organization for the Mid-Atlantic U.S. It helps ensure the lights stay on for 61 million people.
We see, down the road, definitely a lot of gas coming online.
Up until the mid-2000s, about half the electricity in the U.S. was produced by burning coal, and 20% or less came from natural gas. These days, things are different. Tyler Hodge is with the U.S. Energy Information Administration and says the fracking boom has freed up a lot more cheap gas. Now, he says, about 40% of the nation's power comes from coal and 27% is from gas.
Definitely the Mid-Atlantic and Pennsylvania regions especially are showing some significant shifts towards natural gas.
Coal plants are also retiring as the Obama administration pushes its climate change plan. Under the president's proposal, Pennsylvania will have to cut its carbon emissions by a third over the next 15 years. And as more renewables like wind and solar come online, Pentak points out that gas power plants have an advantage. They can ramp up and down quickly.
Natural gas generation is the perfect dance partner for renewable energy.
So when the sun isn't shining and the wind isn't blowing, he says gas can fill in the gaps.
You have to have something that can be quickly dispatched to make up for that lost power, or it threatens the reliability of the grid.
And these changes are largely good news for the grid, says Christina Simeone. She's deputy director of the Kleinman Energy Policy Center at the University of Pennsylvania.
The grid is getting more diversified with respect to sources of fuel. It is getting cleaner. And the prices are going down and perhaps getting more stable.
That's not to say using more gas doesn't pose some problems. Although it produces about half the carbon emissions that coal does when you burn it, scientists are still trying to sort out its overall climate footprint. Simeone says drilling and transporting gas leads to the leakage of methane, a potent greenhouse gas.
You know, when you look at gas production, you look at coal production, you know, these are imperfect resources that do have impacts, just like all of these resources are imperfect and they all have impacts.
Another problem is reliability. While a coal plant can have an extra pile of coal sitting out back, and a nuclear plant can go for years before it needs to refuel, gas plants have to have their fuel the moment it's needed. Gary Helm of the PJM Interconnection says this was particularly problematic during the polar vortex of 2014, when unexpectedly cold weather sparked a huge demand for gas, leading to bottlenecks in the system and price spikes.
So right now it's not economical to have it stored on site. It has to be shipped basically just in time when it's needed. And so that's a different paradigm for the power system.
The U.S. Energy Information Administration is projecting that gas power generation will become increasingly common under the Obama administration's climate plan. The agency expects the regulations will cause coal plant retirements to more than double over the next 25 years, and gas will begin to take its place, followed by more renewable energy. Marie Cusick, State Impact, Pennsylvania.
Taking a look at this evening's headlines, police say they found no evidence of explosives on a U.S. Airways flight targeted with a bomb threat as it flew to Philadelphia from San Diego. Philadelphia police say today's threat pointed to multiple devices aboard U.S. Airways Flight 648. Chief Inspector Joseph Sullivan says bomb threats were made against several other flights around the world. Viewing and funeral arrangements for Beau Biden have been set. The son of Vice President Joe Biden will lie in honor at Legislative Hall in Dover Thursday afternoon. On Friday, there will be a viewing at St. Anthony of Padua Roman Catholic Church in Wilmington. The funeral will take place Saturday there as well. President Barack Obama will deliver the eulogy. Jim Thorpe's surviving sons are asking the U.S. Supreme Court to allow them to pursue reburial of the famed athlete on American Indian land in Oklahoma. Thorpe's body was laid to rest in the Pennsylvania town named in his honor more than 60 years ago. His sons have been fighting to move the remains, saying their father wanted to be buried in the state of his birth. 57 degrees, overcast on Independence Mall. It's 6:18. You're listening to Newsworks Tonight on WHYY. There's a 30% chance of showers overnight, otherwise remaining cloudy. Temperatures holding steady in the mid-50s. Tomorrow, turning partly sunny. Wednesday's high, 68. Still ahead.
No matter what their disability is, they can still grow, they can still develop, they can still have fun.
A Philadelphia program takes an inclusive approach to school sports. That's coming up as Newsworks Tonight continues on WHYY.
Delaware Valley University supports WHYY. With DelVal's Master of Arts in Counseling Psychology, students develop the skills, knowledge, and clinical experience needed to work in the lives of others. Graduates are prepared to apply for the Pennsylvania Licensed Professional Counselor credential. A specialization in social justice or child and adolescent counseling can help make a difference in the community. More about a Delaware Valley University Master of Arts in Counseling Psychology is online at delval.edu/grad.
There will be no toasting and no mummers, but here at WHYY, the year is coming to a close, the fiscal year, that is. Why does this matter to you? WHYY will be stronger with your support. Plus, right now, your donation goes further. A donor is offering a challenge in memory of Dr. Hubert J.P. Schumacher. If we receive 5,000 donations by Monday, June 15th, we'll receive $25,000. Visit WHYY.org to make your donation.
Supporting WHYY, the Rutgers Camden MBA degree allows for specializations in critical areas such as finance, international business, marketing, entrepreneurship, and others. Evening and Saturday classes are held at the Rutgers Camden campus and Camden County College. An information session is on Tuesday, June 23rd at 6 p.m. at Camden County College in Cherry Hill. Details at mba.rutgers.edu or 856-225-6452. Rutgers School of Business, Camden. Expect more. Be more.
Welcome back to Newsworks Tonight. I'm Dave Heller. The Philadelphia School District's special education students operate largely in their own spaces within schools throughout the city. A sports program is looking to bridge the gap between those students and regular education students. WHYY's Nima Roshania reports from the field of Martin Luther King High School in West Oak Lane.
It's a sunny Tuesday morning. Pharrell's Happy is blasting from the speakers. The marching band is out, and three soccer fields at Martin Luther King High School are set up. Students arriving by the busload from throughout Philadelphia are here to play in an interscholastic unified sports soccer scrimmage. The program, run by the Special Olympics, brings together students with special needs with kids in traditional classrooms. The two groups take a class together, practice together, and play against other high schools. Today at MLK, there are teams from a total of five high schools. The program helps special education students develop their athletic abilities, but its truest aim is to promote tolerance and understanding. That's the kind of benefit that lasts long after the cleats are put away, says Nadira McCauley, director of the program.
Students that don't typically talk to each other or engage each other during a school day are now friends on and off the field. They're in class together, building friendships. And oftentimes, you see the two populations segregated, and there's a lot of miscommunication and misunderstanding between the populations. We're just like each other. We have differences, obviously, with everything, but we're more like each other than not.
Every athlete, a student in special education, is matched with a partner, a student in general education classes. The two work together to learn the rules of the game and get comfortable on the field.
My name is Tyler Stokes, and I'm from Abraham Lincoln High School. I'm a special ed program for Lincoln for about 4 years, and I play unified soccer. I just like to have fun and be friends.
His partner, Marissa Midget, also goes to Lincoln.
We all have fun. We're just on the field. Doesn't matter, disabilities or not. We all play together as a team. It's great.
MLK High School autistic support teacher Les Brown says this is the exact point. The special education students have the chance to be part of the broader high school experience.
I think it promotes students really recognizing that no matter what disability is, that they can still grow, they can still develop, they can still have fun.
So with the national anthem,
"All the land of the free and the home of the brave."
And then the Special Olympics oath.
"Let me win, but if I cannot win, let me be brave. And be attacked."
It's time.
Let the games begin.
For WHYY, I'm Nima Roshania.
The news coming out of Chester, Pennsylvania is often bleak. Tales of failing schools, poverty, and fiscal mismanagement. That's why it's especially heartening to introduce Emily Yu. She's a ninth grade student at Bayard Rustin School in Chester. She joins us now to tell us about a competition she won, which will perhaps launch her toward a career in computer coding. Emily, thanks for joining us on NewsWorks Tonight.
Thank you so much for having me.
So congratulations. Tell us about the scholarship you applied for and won.
Okay, so the scholarship I won is funded by Carly Koss, who is a supermodel right now. And her goal was basically to fund the scholarship for 20 girls throughout the country to learn programming over the summer.
What sparked part of your initial interest? Have you been already involved in this kind of work?
I started when I was in middle school, and I've been learning on my own since, and I've taken C and C++ this year in high school.
C and C++, I assume those aren't your grades, those are the names of coding programs.
Yes.
Oh, good. Perhaps you did even better than C and C++. I wouldn't have done that well, frankly, but you say you're drawing on an existing interest. You've been doing it since middle school. What have you been doing so far?
Right now in high school, I started a girls coding club, which basically I want to help other girls, and of course boys as well, to discover and see if computer science is something for them. And the show, like, it's fun, and anyone can do it.
Emily, can you recall any specific programs that you've made and what they actually do?
Specific programs? Yeah, well, my first program was printing out a single line that said, "Hello, world." And that's sort of like the generic program that everyone starts out with. And now in school, I've done programs that calculate like Pythagorean theorem, that interact with the user, ask them for certain data, and then I calculate that and print it out.
Tell us more about the Carly Kloss competition. I understand it involves submitting a video.
Yeah, so she wanted us to submit a 60 to 90 second video telling her why we wanted to learn code.
And so let's let listeners listen to a little bit of your application process.
Being a part of the Code with Carly Scholarship at the Flatiron School would be an incredible opportunity to learn coding with a wonderful community. I believe that learning programming could unlock creativity and lead to amazing innovation. Through this scholarship, I'd like to take the knowledge of coding back to my community and to teach others how to make incredible things. And of course, thank you so much for watching. Bye!
How did you find out that you actually qualified? How many applicants were there for, I believe, some 20 openings?
I think there were about 600 girls who submitted videos, and only 20 got selected.
Oh, my gosh. Congratulations on that. Now, what we're referring to, of course, is the Flatiron School two-week-long program. And tell us about the program.
Basically, they're going to train us high school kids as actual software developers, which is pretty cool.
So you're going to come out of it having actually made a product for the web?
Yes. Yes, we're going to make a website or an app.
Do you foresee yourself following this up either in college or beyond as a career?
Yeah, definitely. I think what I really want to do in the future is I want to make something, whether that's like through engineering or as a computer programmer.
Carly Kloss, who you referred to, is known perhaps mostly as a fashion model. She's also a ballerina, and she took and thrived in this computer coding class at Flatiron. What are your other interests besides this specific pursuit?
I really love drawing, and in my video, I drew and I did stop animation. I really love playing soccer and tennis as well, and of course, reading and, you know, going on the internet.
Emily, thanks so much for joining us, and good luck up at the Flatiron in New York.
Yeah, thank you.
Ninth grader Emily Yu joining us on NewsWorks Tonight. You can see her full application video for the Carly Kloss Scholarship at our website, newsworks.org. That's all for tonight's show. NewsWorks Tonight is produced by Shai Ben-Yakov and Kimberly Haas. Listen again to a story or catch up on a missed show via podcast or online at newsworks.org. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dave Heller for NewsWorks Tonight.
If you are at least 20 pounds overweight, you may be eligible to participate in Project Impact, a research study at Drexel University. This weight loss program is designed to help adults lose weight and keep it off without medication. Guidance from weight loss specialists at group meetings included. Project Impact is funded by the National Institutes of Health. Details at drexel.edu/weightloss or 215-553-7110. Drexel University supports WHYY.
Mr. Eckhart, I want a husband. I'd hate to be some man's property. I shouldn't mind being a bride at a wedding if I could be one without getting a husband.
On the next Fresh Air, Carey Mulligan. She stars in the film Far From the Madding Crowd, starred in An Education and Shame, and is nominated for a Tony for her performance in the Broadway revival of Skylight. Join us.
Tonight at 7 on WHYY-FM.